5, 10 years ago, I would have never thought to put a video like that up for fear of all kinds of things. Some just because the thought of doubting our faith or doubting Christianity in any way, shape, or form was uncomfortable for me. And I think sometimes a thought like, well, if I let those doubts in, like if I acknowledge those doubts, somehow they're going to, you know, take root and I'm going to lose my faith altogether. But I've come to a place of realizing that doubt is a significant part of our faith journey. And though I completely disagree with her outcome and where she is at or where she has landed, she is a person on a journey that many, many people are on, that we interact with, and that many of you are on, as well as I am on. And not everybody has come to the place of understanding the truth in Jesus Christ, and there's doubts that they have about Jesus. And this series is about addressing some of those doubts, talking about them, and seeing what do we do with our doubts other than pray to Buddha and whatever other things she listed off that she had done. Is there room for doubt in your world? And I certainly hope so, because there is a tremendous amount of doubt out there. Doubt, if you were to define what is doubt, it is to be uncertain about something or hesitate to believe. There are some basic things that we take for granted or that we believe, but really there's a lot of doubt in them. For example, sleep. Science knows that we sleep. Science has some idea as to why we sleep, but that is still up for tremendous debate and discovery. But science doesn't know why we need to sleep. There doesn't seem to be a reason why we would need to sleep, but yet we do, and they're trying to figure out what happens when we sleep to see what that might be. But there are other organisms that don't need sleep. And so it doesn't seem to be just all living things need sleep. Only certain living things need sleep, and it's a bit of a mystery. There's some doubt in this in the scientific community. Other things like basic physics. We have recently, the scientific community has discovered that the law of gravity was wrong and that there are properties about gravity that they don't quite know, grasp, or understand yet. Gravity is obvious. I'm being held down to the earth. Science can look at gravity and determine the characteristics of gravity and predict things with gravity. But really, science doesn't know why gravity exists, like how it actually is in being. It just is, and there's some theories as to why it is, but we don't know. There's doubt when it comes to something so basic as what sticks us to the face of the earth. Then there's the idea of the giant universe around us. Science tells us that there are at least hundreds, some say thousands, some scientists say millions of planets in the universe that would contain and hold life similar to Earth. Intelligent beings. If that is the case, okay. But why is it that on Earth here we are beaming out communications into deep space as best we can, but yet we've never heard communication from anybody else? I don't mean necessarily responding to us, but maybe things have been traveling for hundreds, thousands, millions of light years to get to us. We yet don't hear anything out there. Are we the only life form in the whole universe? There's doubt on that. Who are we? Are we not? People have their ideas. None of us know. Science doesn't know. How about just our own existence here on this planet? Some say that we are from some kind of primordial soup. And if that is true, I'm not sure it was Campbell's, but whatever the soup was, here's the question. Well, where did the ingredients for that soup come from? And then what came into being to make those come into being? Sometimes science says the beginning of life, because there's just really no way to explain it, they say it comes from the Big Bang. The Big Bang, whether they mean literally a Big Bang or whether just talking about the beginning of everything, you can't help but ask the next most basic logical question that even a 5-year-old can come up with. And that's what? What caused the Big Bang? There were ingredients that banged. Where did those come from? Because those existed before. And then what created those things and those things? And then you get into this eternal thing that something has always been, and yet science can't wrap their heads around, and it doesn't make sense logically that something could always be. But yet, there it is with our own existence as we try to wrestle with that and understand that. There's other things that we observe in nature, observe in our world that we don't understand. Animal migration. We do not understand how animals know how to migrate from one place to another. All intent and purposes, their brains are not capable of the kind of thought and planning and processing to figure out how to travel 1,000, 2,000, some animals 4,000 or 5,000 mile journeys to get from point A to point B and go back again. Most of us get lost in the mall. I see it. You walk into a store, you walk out, and you're like, wait, which way did we come from? But animals, they figure this out these long distances. We don't know why. We have theories, but we don't know. We think it's like, you know, earth magnetism or something, or something to do with the poles, or smell, or I don't know what. We guess. We don't know. There's doubt in many of the things that we think that we know. And I would tell you that doubt is needed for discovery. Without doubt, we don't discover things. Doubt is necessary in our world. I'm not just talking faith. I'm talking on all things. Doubt drives us to discovery. Without doubt, you can never really discover faith. And faith is a confidence, a belief in something that you cannot explain, cannot see, cannot prove. It was doubt that helped us discover a few things. Doubt helped us discover that the earth was not flat. Doubt is what did that. People doubted that the earth was really flat, and sure enough, we found out that it wasn't flat. Doubt is what told us that the moon is not made out of cheese. Doubt is what told us apparently your blood isn't blue inside your body. Doubt is what says that the earth, the sun does not revolve around the earth. As a result of doubt, we have discovered beyond a shadow of a doubt, proof beyond all proof, that Clint Eastwood is the best actor in human history. And that the movie Unforgiven is the best movie that has ever played, ever. Fact, proof. Thomas. Doubt is normal. Doubt is not something to be afraid of. Doubt is something that you need to lean into in your life, in all areas, but even more so when it comes to your faith in God. Doubt is creates inside you an energy to discover faith and even discover truth. In our Christian faith, doubt is a valued and important part of the faith process and the discovery of truth. I doubt many things in Christianity. And I know that for some of you, you're like, well, you're a pastor, you're not allowed to do any doubting. Most pastors would try to conceal any doubts that they might have because there is this expectation that the guy standing up here has it all figured out. I don't. I don't understand a lot of things about the Bible. When I read the Bible and I read about talking donkeys, that confuses me. I just have never come across one. And there's parts of me that I go, I don't know, I don't get it. Some of the miracles in the Bible, the parting of the Red Sea, you know, that's a pretty big deal. Dead people coming to life. These are not things that I witness or experience in my day-to-day life. People living 500 years, 600 years, 900 years. I mean, I even think if they could give you like some kind of a shot or a pill or, poke this little gland or something and say, now you're going to live forever. You can make my body live forever, I guarantee my knees won't make it. Right? The cartilage is going to wear out. You can all you want. I mean, there's just something that happens. Your body starts falling apart. And there comes a point in time when we're even kind of begging, man, will the ticker quit working? Because everything's broken. We just wear out. I don't know how people live that long. There's doubts that I have about these things, but though I have doubts does not mean that I don't have faith. I have tremendous faith in God and the truth of Scripture and the things that are true here. The fact is that without my inquisitive mind, I would not be a Christian today. I follow Jesus because I believe that Jesus is who he said he was. And I believe that the Scriptures are the place that communicate that truth the best. And I did not come to this conclusion overnight. I did not come to this conclusion because somebody told me. I didn't come to this conclusion because it's expected of me. but it came through serious consideration of the evidence in front of me, through careful study, through examination. Through that, I read, I asked questions, I listened. I kept my ear turned towards truth, regardless of what my preference was or how I wanted things to turn out. I wanted truth to be truth, and I wanted to go where that went. It led me to the place of Jesus Christ, and I've surrendered myself to him since. I'm a follower of Christ because of the evidence that I have examined that proves that there's truth there. And the Bible is an illustration of a journey of doubters. Throughout the Bible, it's about people who doubt and people that discover faith along the way. The characters and the stories throughout the scriptures are not fables or fairy tales. The people that are contained in it are people that are regular people like you and I. And that's why they had doubts and they had concerns and they were unsure about things. And God met them in those places. They had doubts. We have doubts. It's a normal part of the process. Now, I will admit that there are times that I believe that Satan puts doubts in our minds. And I think Satan does that for the strict purpose of hoping that we will abandon, ignore, or reject the truth or the things about God, never live out the plan that he has in our lives. Much like how Satan did this the very first time with Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were in the garden. They were not looking to question their faith at all, but Satan comes and he plants a seed. And this is what he says in Genesis 3:1. He said, "Did God really say you must not eat the fruit from any of the trees in the garden?" Did he really say that? Adam and Eve knew full well that God had said that because he said it. But you see, what Adam and Eve wanted is they wanted to be their own God. So Satan provided the opportunity by planting a seed of saying, "Did he really?" And if they could have doubt in one area of God, they could just toss the rest, throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so they decided, "Oh, yeah, he must not have. And so certainly we can eat this fruit." And they convinced one another and they ate the fruit. Satan planted a seed of doubt, not because they were doubting, but because Satan knew they were looking for a reason to disobey God. Sometimes doubt becomes a reason to never join in the faith community or make a commitment to God. As long as we have some particular doubt, whatever that doubt may be, we can or should be able to then reject the whole thing. Doubt can become an excuse to not have faith. The key is to stop seeing doubt as a limiter and seeing it as a welcoming companion to discovering truth. I mean, you already have doubts in many things. The thing is that most of the time, those doubts don't keep you from being involved in whatever it is. You're going to get in your car today, and aside from me planting the seed in your mind right now, you're going to get in your car today, and you are not going to think, this is my possible last car ride, and I just might die on my way home. Every one of you know that it's possible. You read in the paper all the time of people dying in car accidents. But that doesn't keep you from riding in a car. You still get in the car. You kind of say, well, the chances are slim. I don't know how slim they are. I don't know what kind of driver you are. But nonetheless, you still get in the car, right? But you cannot be 100% certain that you're going to make it. Right? Some of you, it's with airplanes. Some of you will not get on an airplane because you doubt that that airplane will get you from point A to point B. So because of that doubt, you throw out airplanes altogether. Even though the odds of you dying in the car today are much greater than the airplane. Now for me, I have no doubt in airplanes. I know that they crash. I know when they crash, survival is slim to none. And it's not an experience I would ever want to experience. But I still get on airplanes. And you know, when I get on an airplane, the only thing that I'm really worried about, can I somehow get the stewardess to give me the entire can instead of just filling up the cup? And if I can get that done, I'm like, this is a successful flight. That's really what I'm thinking about. In fact, when the plane gets pressurized before it takes off, I'm out. Snoozing away. Just tell my wife, wake up when that Coke comes, because I got to work my deal. But others of you sitting in this room won't get on a plane because that doubt makes you throw the whole thing out. And people do that with Christianity. You doubt one area, and because you doubt that one area, you throw the whole thing out. And I'm telling you, you don't have to do that. You can work through your doubt. You can find evidence. You can discover truth. You can ask questions, but it doesn't mean that the whole thing is rubbish just because you can't make sense of one portion or one part. And this happens everywhere in our lives. Many people continue smoking, though they know it might kill them, right? But you doubt that it's going to be you. That's why you continue. There's all kinds of things. You get on that ride in the fairground, though you know. You invite your mother-in-law over for the weekend. Any of these things could kill you. You don't know. You can't be 100% sure that they won't. You have doubts. We all have doubts. But just because we have doubts doesn't mean we have to throw out the entire idea. Now, if the doubts are significant enough, then maybe so. But you need to explore, you need to understand, you need to rationalize some of the thoughts and the doubts that you have. Do you know that the disciples doubted? Jesus is 12, like the closest group to him that they doubted. And I don't mean that they just doubted like along the journey. Jesus lived with these guys for over 3 years, doing ministry, doing miracles, having them join him in miracles. Remember the whole like loaves and fishes, and they spread them out, and it was all said and done, they had all these barrels of fish and bread left over. I mean, this incredible experience. Watching him, you know, take people that had been blind and give them sight, or people that are lame and have them walk. I mean, one thing after another, miracle after miracle after miracle. These guys got to see that and partake in that. They watched him get crucified. They watched him get buried. And they watched him come out of the grave. And when it was all said and done, some disciples doubted. And I just got to think, seriously? Like after all that, you're going to doubt? That's because they were real people. And they really did struggle. You might have a doubt in a certain area. Maybe yours is the airplane thing. I don't doubt in that. You do. But there's probably things I doubt in that you don't doubt in. Just because you have a doubt doesn't mean everybody has that. We each have our own things. And some of these disciples doubted. In fact, in Matthew chapter 28, verses 16 and 17, you can read it. It says, and then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. This is, again, after the resurrection. It says, when they saw him, they worshiped him. Awesome. But some of them doubted. How could they doubt? Because they were human. And doubt is a very normal and natural part of the discovery of truth. In fact, they go as far as to say that without doubt, faith is impossible. Without doubt, there is no room for faith. Only some of the disciples doubted, not all of them. Not everybody had the same doubts, but some did. I doubt in some things that you don't doubt in. And I have discovered that doubt for me tells me that I don't fully understand, or I have incomplete information, or I have incorrect application of the information that's in front of me. The disciples saw Jesus alive, they saw him die, and they saw him resurrect. And there was doubt in some. Now, if you were writing the Bible and you were going to make just this a fictitious book, okay? You're just making it all up. Jesus has 12 disciples, you wrote the whole story, did a great job. Comes to this point of the resurrection, they're on the mountaintop, Jesus is there, he's getting ready to zoop, you know, head off into heaven, and they're all there. Would you say that some of them doubted in him at that moment? Would you write that? That would be ignorant. Because you would cast a seed of doubt for everyone reading it. Well, why would they doubt? No, you'd say they were all 100% on board, and if you doubt this, here's the evidence, here's the witnesses, talk to any of them. That's how you would write it. But to say that they doubted, for me, is another example of authenticity and accuracy within the scriptures that tells the truth, what people were going through in those moments. And not just what you want to hear, what you would expect to hear, but truly, that they struggled and they doubted in those moments. Now, one of the disciples that is known the most for doubting, his name is what? Poor Thomas. I don't know, Thomas got a bad rap. I don't think he should have been called Doubting Thomas because of one question that he asked along the way. I think if anything, his name should have been something like Inquisitive Thomas or Discerning Thomas or Suspicious Thomas, Realist Thomas, Non-Gullible Thomas. But no, instead he's Doubting Thomas. The witness of Thomas, if you look at before this question that defined him for all eternity, before that question, if you look at Thomas's life, Thomas was a rock solid guy, and afterwards a rock solid guy. So you got to even think with the question, still rock solid guy. But like beforehand, there was one point in which Jesus said, we got to leave this area because we're going to get killed. And they head off to this other area. They're doing ministry there. And then the disciples are all super glad to not be in the place where they could possibly be killed. And then Jesus says, I got a friend, he's sick, named Lazarus. Actually, he's dead. He's going to raise him from the dead. He says, let's go back where they're going to kill us. And anybody want to go? And like you could just hear in the scriptures, like the crickets. Chirp, 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 chirp. And you know what Thomas says? Rock on, let's go. I'm ready. And Thomas is ready to die for Jesus. So Thomas is a rock solid guy. But there, of course, is this moment. John chapter 20, in which this takes place. One of the disciples, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, was not with the others when Jesus came. He missed church, by the way. Notice that? That is truly what happens here. They're gathered together. Thomas isn't there. He doesn't make it for, he slept in, had pancakes or something. Verse 25, they told him, because he wasn't there, we have seen the Lord. He's resurrected out of the grave. But he replied, I won't believe unless I see the nail wounds at his hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hand into the wound in his side. And most people would say, oh, Thomas, man of little faith, Doubting Thomas. You doubt. Do you know why he doubted? Jesus was dead, on a cross, dead, beaten, back ripped open, buried, tomb, rock rolled over, done. And these disciples just said, oh, we saw him. Who is going to blame Thomas for this? That is the least I would say, that I would prove it. I mean, I just said, you guys have been in the communion wine too much. I don't know what's going on, but no way this took place. Thomas gets the label of Doubting Thomas as a result. Let me give a little side detour here before I move on. Some of you in your Bibles with the NIV, the word twin is translated, you actually get the Greek word. Anybody have it out there? Word for twin? Yeah, there you go, Didymus, thank you. Didymus is the Greek word for twin. Throughout the Bible, it continues to say Thomas. It says, but he was called Didymus. He was a twin. So he had an identical twin. And to keep the two apart, no one called Thomas by his name. They just called him twin, which was Didymus. And I've shared this before. I think it's true. But those that knew Thomas best called him T. Diddy, I think. Because Jesus was like a really hip guy. I've got a picture of gangster Jesus here. Nope, that's hipster Jesus. I've got it here somewhere. What? No, astronaut Jesus, Batman Jesus. There he is. See? Just put a different hat on Jesus. He can be whatever you want him to be. But, you know, for real, like, you know, for Thomas, he's doubting, he's struggling. And the story goes on. It says 8 days later, so this is a week later, so church is happening again. It says 8 days later, disciples were together again. They just really got to point out Thomas's absence issues. It says, this time Thomas was with them. The doors were locked, but suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them. So this is just kind of like, you know, materializing through walls. Would have been a bit startling. So Jesus' next words are super important because he says, peace be with you. Really good. If you're going to materialize into a room, peace be with you is a good way to start. And then he said to Thomas, keywords. Put your finger here and look at my hands and put your hand into the wound in my sides. Don't be faithless any longer. Believe. My Lord and my God, Thomas exclaimed. And then Jesus told him, you believe because you've seen me. And blessed are those who believe without seeing me. The Bible never tells you and I to have a blind faith. Too many years growing up, as I questioned things about Christianity and I questioned things about the Bible, people would say, just have faith. Don't doubt. Just believe. And Jesus, again and again, does not ask us to check our brains at the door, but to come with our inquisitive minds, to come with our questions. Thomas had questions, same like the disciples who were a little bit irritated at, just talked about his church attendance. But Jesus, on the other hand, said, hey, test it out. And do you think that when Thomas got all said and done, he was 100% good and had no more questions? You got to be kidding. If his mind works anything like my mind, I'd have stuck my hand in the holes, I'd have seen the whole thing, and I would have said two things. First thing I would have said is, you are the real deal. I'm good with that. You are the resurrected Jesus. I am on board with you. Secondly, tell me more about this. Like, were you really dead? Were you just sleeping? Can other people do this? Once this happens, do you ever die? Can this happen to me? I mean, it would have had so many more questions. And though he had other questions and those other doubts and concerns didn't make him throw the whole thing out, because his doubts had been answered on the bigger questions of his faith and paved the way and was the seed to an incredible faith in Thomas's life in the person, the resurrected Jesus Christ. Doubt reveals your honesty. And in honesty, you will discover truth. Doubt is an important part of your faith. And if I could give you some advice, I'd tell you a couple of things that you can and should do with your doubt. First of all, use doubt as a catalyst for discovering truth. Just like when Jesus told Thomas to put his finger in the side at his moment of doubt, we too need to search out truth and put our finger in the side as we discover the truth through our own struggles and our own doubts. Things that I would ask you to do or encourage you to do is to read the Bible. Reading the Bible is the best way that I know to hear God's audible words to you. Not many of us here today does God speak to in an audible voice. But through the scriptures, God's word becomes alive. I try to encourage people. People ask questions like, hey, I read this in the Bible, but then I heard this other person saying this. And I always say, let the Bible interpret the Bible. Where else does the Bible talk about this thing you're talking about? Let the Bible interpret the Bible. Let God's word interpret what it means, instead of just an outside source listening to that. But it's through reading the Bible. If you never read the Bible, you are never hearing God's word. And I don't mean God's word like reading the Bible. I mean hearing the words of God for you, to you. Reading the Bible is key, first thing, in working through the doubts that we have. Secondly, ask questions. Ask questions. Always ask questions. And when people say to you, you shouldn't question, just stop asking that person questions. Because what it means is that they have questions that they've not been able to wrestle with or are afraid to wrestle with. And so they have decided that questions are bad and they're just going to blindly believe. And when real life hits them, they'll lose their faith. You have to question, and you will find truth. You will find answers. You will discover truth. Each week in this series, I'm going to invite you to ask questions. And you can have questions, and on the fourth Sunday, so the Sunday after Easter, I'm going to answer all of your questions of doubt when it comes to faith. Some of your questions may be things like, you know, do animals go to heaven? And I will tell you, I don't know. I'll tell you, my grandmother said, Dougie, if you want your cat to go to heaven with you, by the way, do not want my cat to be in heaven, but if you need your cat there to be happy, then God will make sure your cat is there. You know, that's just, she just made that up. She doesn't know. She does know one truth. She knows that heaven is all good and I'm not going to have like a hole in me because something that I love isn't there. She knows that because the Bible is clear about that. So she's just making the connection that, well, if you need your cat, it's going to be there. If you don't need the cat, oh, maybe it's not there. But, you know, people like, you know, I'm attached to this animal, so it just has to be with me for me to feel like I can have eternity. I can't imagine eternity without it. And if you tell me that my cat or my dog or my pony or my pet alligator isn't going to be there, I'm going to throw out all Christianity. It's foolishness. I may not have the answers to all of the questions, but I'll at least be honest enough to tell you where I've struggled with, what I know, what I don't know, what I speculate, what others might say about it. But you never know. You might ask a question that I have wrestled with, and I can at least let you know where I've landed on it because of the information I have. So you can email those to me. My email is in the bulletin. You can put them on the connection cards each week as you come through, or you can grab a 3x5 card at the Welcome Center. They're just blank, and you put your question on there. You don't have to put your name on it. If you're afraid to put your name on it, you think, like, yo, Pastor Doug will think less of me if I ask this question. Fine, just put the question, and then just drop it in one of the wooden towers. I'll never know any difference, and I'll get them all together, and we'll work through them. I kind of like these things. I like being on the hot seat. I like not knowing exactly what's coming at me, because I'm not afraid of it anymore. I think your doubts are the catalyst for your faith. I think it's the beginning of the real journey. But it's when we try to conceal or hide that we have these doubts, that's where the problems come in. So read the Bible, ask questions. I think also find help for your questions. If people aren't helping you, you can read some commentaries. When I was younger in my faith journey, I read a lot of books on apologetics. That's not how to apologize, though that, I could benefit from reading a book on that. Apologetics are books about defending your faith. And there's an author by the name of Josh McDowell, if you're interested in this. Josh McDowell was an author that really helped me. He has a book called A Ready Defense. And it's formulated really well that there's all the questions and you just flip to those and you can read the answer. They're great. So that's Josh McDowell, A Ready Defense. And I think lastly, I would encourage you to pray about your doubt. Talk to God about it, because if God cared enough to help Thomas, don't you think he cares enough to help you? Now remember, doubt should never be an excuse for not having faith. I'm one of the hardest guys in the world to convince of anything. I need a lot of evidence, a lot of data. I think things over week after week and month after month and year after year. But as I have discovered and thought about Christianity, I have discovered a faith where I once only had doubt. I still have doubts, and that's okay, because I'm still thinking and I'm still learning. I'm still discovering. I'm still questioning. But I have learned this. I have learned that when you remove doubt, you then have the seeds of faith. When you remove doubt, what remains are the seeds of faith. There's a tipping point in which doubt has been answered and faith takes over. Thomas had doubts, then he put his fingers in Jesus' side. Doubt was answered and faith began to grow. This didn't mean that Thomas still didn't have questions, but Thomas had enough information to see beyond any reasonable doubt that Jesus was alive. Obviously, Thomas wondered how it was possible, how Jesus could be physically dead. Was he raised from the dead by some strange means? Could others be raised? What, how, why? He had questions. It would be unrealistic to think that the finite mind can understand an infinite reality. It's just not possible. But we can address what we do know. We remove doubt. And when we think on what we can't understand still, we allow faith to bridge the gap. I still have questions. I trust you still have questions. But I will no longer allow doubt to fester into unbelief. I will work hard, and I encourage you to work hard to discover truth. And I trust that God will provide me with the answers that I need in my faith, because he encourages us to do so, and I trust he will do the same for you. Faith is my confident assurance in what I can't see. I can't prove God in a laboratory. I mean, there's some Christians that say, yes, you can. I can't. I can't prove God any more than science can prove wind. We can see the effects of it, but we can't see it. I can see the effects of God all around me, but I can't put them in a test tube for you. Not seeing does not mean non-existence. You can't explain the universe. Science tries so hard. And when we look out in our telescopes and we say, well, here's this, and this universe is this far, and this galaxy is this far, and this planet's this far, and this star is this far away. And then you ask the question, well, what's after that, you know? And science says it goes on forever. There's not an end. But science says that's illogical, because eternity can't exist in science. But yet there also can't be an end, and there can't be a beginning. And so we're forced to deal in science with the idea of eternity that is illogical, but is the only answer that makes sense of what we see. That's where doubt and faith take over. A faith in what you can't understand, what you can't explain, but yet see in front of you as truth. Don't fear your doubt. Embrace it as a means to your faith. Here at Hillcrest, I make the proclamation that you are allowed to doubt. We welcome the honesty that you can have and the doubts that you have, and that when you doubt honestly, you will discover truth. Church history will prove that the church has not always done so well with doubters. But we must remember what Jude said. Jude said, "Be merciful to those who doubt." Not only should the church show mercy to those who doubt, but God also shows that mercy to us. To conclude our service, we've got some gals that are going to do a liturgical dance to a beautiful song to kind of help us focus on this as Tarina sings this song for us. I've really been struggling this morning what to call our dance group, because they really haven't come up with a name. So I'm calling them the Hillcrest Solid Gold Dancers. So without further ado.